Hello everyone, I'm Tech Sergeant Shane Hughes, and you're listening to Episode 3 of Beyond the Horizon, a podcast produced by the Ohio Air National Guard's 178th Wing in Springfield, Ohio. Today's guest is First Lieutenant Courtney Slater, and she's here to share her story about an attempted suicide in her family and how her family recovered. Thank you for being here. If you would, start by telling me about your uncle.
My Uncle Robert is like a second father to me. He's almost like a best friend. He's my godfather, my dad's only brother. So it's the two younger brothers and three older sisters. Big Irish Catholic family out on the East Coast. He's blessed with four kids, and my Uncle Robert is just the life of everything. Sometimes he goes by Bob. I've always called him Uncle Robert. So when I hear someone in the family call him Bob, I get really confused. He's great. He's all about his family. He loves and adores his wife more than anything. They have such a beautiful relationship, successful kids, and he's an incredible person, the kind of person you want at every event. He wants to be there with everybody and family, and he's one of my biggest supports next to my parents. Oh, I'm trying to think what else. Do you want like a short story about the kind of support?
Yeah, that would be great.
So I had a rocky road through college. It took me a long time to get through. So when it came time for graduation and celebrating, he said that he would be there no matter what. And what that turned into is that morning he went to his son's kindergarten graduation, watched his son walk, and then hopped on a plane from the school, flew out to Ohio from New Jersey to be there at my college graduation. Those are the kind of moments that really shine and show just the kind of person he is. He will go from one thing to the next to make sure that he is there for his family at all times. It was special. It was really special that he did that for me.
You said he was like a second father to you. Why were you both so close?
My Uncle Robert was kind of the kind to, he was the fun uncle. He would wrestle around. They lived near the beach out in Jersey, which was always fun. My dad's family, they're all out in New Jersey. My dad's the only one that relocated out of the state. And he's the one he always called. He always wanted us out there. He took us to the beach all the time. I don't know what it was, but my uncle and I have always been close, even though there's that distance between Ohio and Jersey. He's the one that we always stayed in touch with the most of everyone. It was always the phone calls on the birthdays and holidays. He never forgot. They grew up in a very strict, traditional Catholic family, like through and through. And so the role of godfather was like this coveted position for anyone in the family. If you were a godparent, that was the second most important job in their life as a godparent. And he took it serious. And so we've always had this special bond, no matter what it was. You know, when I was getting married, he would call and make sure that my dad was giving me exactly what I wanted for my wedding. And if not, he was going to call and talk to him, which he did a couple of times. Still didn't get everything I wanted, but he's that life of the party, just a happy, fun-spirited. You go to him with anything and everything, and we just maintain that special relationship. You know, I talk to him monthly, even as a grown adult now. You know, I call him for anything that I may need that I won't necessarily call my parents for. You know, he's that next stop, and if I need him to come out for something, for a special celebration or just for some family time, I know I can pick up the phone and he will literally work the time in between meetings to make sure that he gets out there. Or if I have a layover somewhere, you know, in New York or New Jersey, he will come to the airport and hang out with me or even my sister on a layover just to get that special time in. He's a great guy.
What events led up to his crisis?
I didn't know about the crisis until in the moment. And kind of the after effects of everything that fell into place and what fell into pieces. He was a businessman living in Jersey, working in New York. He was selling bonds, was his line of work, whatever piece he played in that process. And he had lived this glamorous life. And when I say glamorous, he's the type, he took his wife to Paris to propose to her on top of the Eiffel Tower. He wanted to go above and beyond and support his family. And he felt a lot of pressure to do so, that he had to live up to a certain life. And he wasn't able to maintain that. He put on this facade that's what he could do. He's always going to be able to do it. And when crunch time came, the finances started to crumble. His business started to crumble. And he had that experience that I'm sure many Americans can relate with of, oh my gosh, I'm going bankrupt. I have a wife who is used to a certain living style, standard of living. I have two beautiful kids that I have to support, and my world is falling apart. I can't financially provide for them. You know, my wife deserves better. My kids deserve better. I feel like I'm failing. There's also a lot of alcohol use in the family, and that's what he turned to. He was a frat boy in college, and he lived up to that stereotypical frat boy. And he turned back to the alcohol when things were getting tough, and more alcohol plus his financial burdens that, you know, were semi-self-inflicted with what he wanted to be able to provide and how business was going. When, you know, you add the two, when the one crumbles and the substance abuse, you know, jumps up, it's a bad combination. And that feeling of self-worth and just he wasn't good enough is ultimately what led to a really dark moment in our family's life.
You said you worked in the financial sector. Did this happen around the 2008 financial crisis?
The financial struggles were much earlier on, like 1995, 97, so several years back. We were still pretty young when it happened, so unrelated to the market. And we just happened to get into a bad spot within his own business. And it wasn't solely isolated to just him. People within the company were suffering the same. So he wasn't alone, although he may have felt alone. It wasn't necessarily the case, and how he chose to cope with it was, instead of, you know, figuring out a plan and moving forward, he kind of flailed, you know, in this water, essentially, you know, kind of metaphorically flailed in this water, trying to keep his head above, and he turned to alcohol and wasn't sure what else to do. He didn't want to admit that he was struggling. And the outside struggle with the financials and then the substance abuse turned into internal struggles of self-worth and how can I come back from this? What can I do to relieve this stress from my family?
How old were you when all of this happened?
I was 11 or 12. I want to say it was the fall, right after my 11th birthday, I believe it was. So, late elementary school years. Very formative years. As someone that's very young, you know, just finding myself, learning more about the world, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and, you know, being so involved with my family, that time was a very hard time to process what was going on.
I know you said you were pretty young, but looking back, were there any signs that he was struggling with thoughts of suicide?
I knew something was going on right away. My dad traveled quite often for his line of work, and I remember waking up one morning and dad was gone. Wait a second, we have things to do today. And I asked my mom where he went, and she said that he had to go out to New Jersey to visit family and see his brother. And I was really disappointed I didn't get to go, but mom said, you know, dad's got some things to take care of. He he's helping, you know, your uncle out with some stuff that's come up. And it wasn't until later that I found out the story. But instantly, a change that I noticed was my dad, who also suffered from some alcohol abuse, decided one day that he was going to become sober. And he was gung-ho that that was going to be what he was doing. And he had made this pact with his brother that they were going to go sober together. And looking back, I realized that that timing added up with what I then found out was a suicide attempt from my uncle. And that was part of the recovery process, not just for my uncle, but for the whole family to cope with. And, you know, it did come out later that, yes, that was part of the reason that, you know, my family went dry. And not just my dad and his brother, but all the siblings as part of that group effort. So those were the biggest signs that I noticed when it first happened, you know, that geographical separation. I didn't see the financial struggles that he was going through. I just heard about them afterwards. But I very much remember waking up, my dad was gone. Where's he at? Okay, dad's back a few days later. And all of a sudden now he's decided he's going to go sober. And that was just part of that recovery, and those signs that, hey, there's something going on. What's happening? We're Catholic. We love to drink. So that was a big shift, you know, just within our own family's culture of what we did, how we celebrated things. So that was a big adjustment right from the beginning.
When did you learn about his attempted suicide?
A few years later, I came home from school and I want to say it was 13, maybe 8th grade, freshman year of high school. I want to say it was freshman year of high school. I came home from school and we had had a class on suicide. And I have been listening to everyone else in the class and people are talking about, oh, that's so selfish. You know, people that commit suicide, they're just selfish people. They're not thinking about anyone but themselves. And as a very young, impressionable person, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, that is so selfish. You know, why would anyone do that? Think about everyone else that they're leaving behind. Like, they've got to be crazy to think that that's what they have to do. And I came home, and I was talking to my parents about it and telling them about this class. And my dad got really emotional, and he ended up leaving. He's going to an AA meeting, you know, as part of his own process, and my mom kind of sat me down and told me that my uncle had tried to commit suicide. And it was kind of a not I don't want to say slap in the face. I felt ashamed of what I had said about people being selfish. And my mom kind of looked at me and said, what if I was feeling that way, that I needed to take my own life? And I hear people around me talking, oh, that's selfish, that's selfish. I wouldn't want to talk to anybody and say, hey, this is how I'm feeling. I don't want to be judged or meant to feel ashamed. And it was a very much a kind of a come to Jesus moment. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it was a come to Jesus moment for me about the way I thought about suicide and how all the memories I made in the last 2 years since this attempt with my uncle, how I could have had none of that. And I understood after talking to my mom why my family was going through a journey of sobriety. Why all of a sudden we didn't just spend Thanksgiving in New Jersey, but we went after Christmas as well. And my dad and his brother took trips, golfing trips, every year because we needed to be together. And how I thought about suicide and how I talk about suicide matters. It matters not just for my own internal processing, but it matters to the people around us that may be struggling with it, and how they hear us talk about it can very much influence whether or not they want to come forward and talk. Suicide was never a topic within my family before this event. And it was never something that people talked about being ashamed of. And I think just the family culture of being open and non-judgmental opened that door for my uncle to get help. When you're in a moment of, I've got a drink in one hand, I have my loaded weapon in another, and you're sobbing, you feel hopeless, who are you going to call? Are you going to call someone that openly says, hey, you're selfish for feeling this way? Or are you going to call someone that, you know, isn't going to judge? And they're just, they're going to be there. And my family was able to be that for my uncle. And so in that moment when I found out what happened, I changed my attitude about it from, you're not selfish, you're probably the strongest man that I know, to be able to put aside all of that pride. I can only imagine, as a man with beautiful wife, gorgeous kids, the pride that must be there of, look what I've been able to do. Look at this family that I have grown and what I can do for them. To lose all that and think there's no way out, to be able to say, I need help, is, I think, more courageous than anything else. And so that's what kind of happened in that moment. Not a I pity you moment for my uncle, but wow, you are a strong individual. It takes so much more to come forward than it is to hide or to end his life.
I know it's not easy to talk about these kinds of things, so thank you very much for sharing that with us. So how did your family respond to and recover from that crisis moment?
It was a group effort. We have a big Catholic family. There's 5 siblings, lots of nieces and nephews. My grandparents were still around at the time. One of the siblings, my aunt, and there's 3 of them. One of them was close enough when my uncle made the call. She literally dropped everything in the middle of the night. It's kind of that scary middle of the night, 2 a.m. phone call that you see like out of the movies. Like, what? Something's going on. Dropped everything and rushed to him. And thankfully made it to his hotel in time. It was a process as the family. The first step was to let everyone know what happened without causing embarrassment. And I'm sure on the inside he did feel a little bit of that, but there was no judgment. Everybody came to him. My dad flew out there immediately, and we had to work a plan. We had to find what's the root cause of what's going on. You know, there's financial issues, there's some substance abuse, and then there's that internal struggle of, you know, feeling no self-worth. So the first step, as a pack, all the siblings said, okay, we're going to get you sober. And if that means we have to do it with you, then we're going to do it with you. Financially, we got my uncle and his family out of their home, and another member of the family had a rental property and allowed them to stay there rent-free while they got back on their feet. Those are big things that we were very fortunate to be able to do for him. My uncle wanted to file for divorce from his wife because of everything that was going on and said, you know, Maura deserves so much more. My dad's an attorney, so he contacted my dad to help him with that. And my dad wouldn't do it. He said, we'll come up with a plan together. And my aunt, in her very, you know, New Jersey, I'm boss mom, you know, attitude, you are not leaving. I am not going anywhere. She really stuck with him through everything. And she gave him a new feeling of self-worth, that he wasn't in this alone, that as partners and a family, they could get through it. So we helped financially in terms of making sure that they had a place to stay and that they would be okay. You know, we got together and still tried to provide some normalcy for the kids. You know, so you may not be going to your own beach house this summer, but you're going to come on vacation with us. You're going to come visit us. We're going to get together as a family and spend these holidays together. We are going to be, you know, partners as we go through sobriety. And we're going to change the way that we educate our kids when it comes to suicide. And we're going to work on compassion and love. And at the end of the day, we understand that how we feel about your situation is irrelevant. And we really had to not just say it, but we had to believe it. We had to live it. It did not matter how we felt about it. It mattered how he felt about it. And that's his reality. And so we had to work on his reality and make him understand that he has a place in our family and he's loved. And we're going to take advantage of all these times together and make you see your kids and your wife will never be better off without you. And if that means you are going to live in our rental rent-free for 5 years while you pick yourself back up, then that's what we're going to do as a family. And we're going to make sure everyone understands, you know, that we're all on this journey to sobriety. So we're not going to tempt you. We're not going to joke about things that are real struggles for you. It took years for everything to fully bounce back for him, but he did. And that was huge. And looking back, we can see, like, he's rebounded 10 times over. He had 2 kids at the time. Now he has 4. You know, one just graduated from college this year. The other's at UCLA. One is off to Boston as a freshman. His other is a junior in high school. Like, his family is thriving. He has bounced back financially. He's living his dream. He's still with his wife, who we just love and adore and respect so much for holding on during those really tough times. And we don't say it out loud, but we all know that, you know, he was able to recover because we all came together and we helped and we supported and we truly loved unconditionally my uncle. And if he had succeeded, if he hadn't have had us there, or if he hadn't have been able to put all pride aside and reach out for help, even in the last moment effort, then he wouldn't have had the opportunity to recover like he did. And if he had succeeded in suicide, our family would have come together the same for each other, not just for him, but we would have come together for each other, but we never would have recovered.
You said the conversation you had with your parents changed how you view suicide. Did you ever talk to your uncle about it?
I never specifically talked about it. I don't know if confronted's the right terminology for it. He was aware that the family knew, or who within the family knew. I don't know that his own kids know about it. It's such a private experience that people go through. And I know that he knows that I know. And when I call him and I say, hey, how are you doing today? How's your journey going through sobriety? That he knows I'm checking in on him. And he appreciates that. It doesn't have to be said. And it's one of those you forgive but never forget kind of things. And there's nothing to really forgive, but it's one of those, you know, we're not going to forget, but we're not going to hold it over his head either. It's that moment that kind of gets put aside and we remember it's the lessons learned. And we can still check in on each other, see how everyone's doing without saying, hey, have you thought about suicide today? And we go about it in different ways, but we know that if push came to shove, we can say it. And he can say it. He knows he can reach out to the family. And our family members know that we can reach out to each other. But I've never had to directly talk to him about it. I don't know that asking him to relive those moments would be beneficial to him, to look back. We try to keep moving forward. And you can't keep moving forward if you're always looking back. You're going to run into a wall if you do that. It just doesn't work. At least for us. It doesn't work for us. Not saying that it wouldn't work for others. But he knows. He knows that I know. And he knows that I value our relationship and that he is a very important, irreplaceable person in my life. And that's the way we want it to be. We want to be there for each other. I want him at all these events. I want to be at his birthday celebrations and the family holidays. And we just leave it at that. You know, those hugs we both know mean a little bit more. And those times that we're together.
Can you tell me a little more about where he is now and how his life has improved since his attempt?
So if we go back to a snapshot of where he was in the middle of a crisis, he was filing for bankruptcy. He had 2 kids. He was going under on his home. And right after he no longer had his home, he was living in a property owned by the family and not sure how he's going to get his kids into the schools they wanted to send them. You know, is he ever going to be able to support them going to college like he wanted? You know, could he keep his wife at home, you know, versus having her work because he wanted someone there with the kids all the time and for her to thrive being a mom in that capacity. And, you know, however many years later, over 20 years later or so, he's been able to do all that. He's bounced back tenfold financially. He moved on from his company. The company ended up going under. So they all were looking for new jobs, all the employees. He's found a new company. He's grown within that company. And, you know, he was able to purchase another home and put down roots and call it home. I think that's probably one of his most proud accomplishments after coming from where he was, to have a beautiful home. He was able to put his kids in the schools that he wanted to put them in, which out there was a private school. He just had one child graduate from college debt-free. He's about to have another child graduate from college in 2 years here, again, debt-free. He was able to keep his wife at home. He recovered. His life now is a completely different snapshot of where it was back then. You know, he was able to get his summer home on the beach. He had his boat. He'd always dreamed of having a boat. Him and his dad used to go fishing when they were growing up. And so his dream was to be able to take his kids fishing out on the boat. And he was able to do that. He recovered and was able to make those dreams come true from being at the bottom of the barrel. He came back. The boat ended up being a waste. He hated taking care of it. So it's gone. But he can look back and say, I had a dream. I made it happen. And now he's living it. he's not stressed. You know, he's looking now in the next few years, okay, how can I retire and enjoy this beautiful life that I've built with my family? I spend every holiday with our family. And he loves those moments. And it's so different from where he was personally so long ago. You know, what he values is different. Yeah, the financials bounce back. And that's important because he still needs to put food on the table. But the amount of love and that feeling of, I can do this. I am a stable person that can provide for my family. And just the amount of love that's there between him and his kids is absolutely incredible. From going from this disconnected, looking at his kids as, I love you, but I don't know that I can do this. You're better off without me. To, you know, they have the best relationship. And hey, I have molded you guys into wonderful people. It's completely different. He's enjoying his life of sobriety. So not only is he living his best life, but he gets to remember all the moments too. You know, that's the trade-off. And he wouldn't change it for anything. He's never lived life again with any regrets. And his outlook of, okay, like this time is hard, but I know I can bounce back. I've already been at the bottom and have made a full turnaround. I know these small things that come around, they're not forever. This is temporary.
If he had died from suicide, how would that have changed your life?
If my uncle had died from suicide, our family would have never been whole again. Some of my favorite memories growing up are with him. You know, he had a special role at my wedding. He wouldn't have been there for that. And it would have been very obvious that there was a hole there. You know, our family portrait would have forever been changed. Now, there's supposed to be 5 siblings there together, and missing one, you never see that same whole picture. He wouldn't have been at my college graduation, and I remember just crying happy tears and tears of disbelief that he actually came from his son's kindergarten graduation that morning out to my college graduation. I wouldn't have had that moment, you know, when I went through a really nasty divorce and was feeling down. That's who I called first. You know, all those moments of support. I think everyone goes through a dark time. At one point or another, people are going to go through a tough time. You know, the degree of it varies person to person. And he was my rock and my support through that because I knew him more than anyone else knew how to recover. You know, and some days I would call him in tears. Oh my gosh, you know, what is going on in my life? What the heck? You know, and other times I'd be angry, matter of fact, and he always had the right things to say. And he's been such an inspiration, and having that support can't be replaced. It's special from him. And I would have missed out on all that. You know, I would have 2 cousins that were never alive, never born. I would have just had the older 2. They're great, but I love the younger 2 as well. And just the addition of that family, you know, my relationship with my cousins would have been different, with his wife, my aunt, that would have been different. And I can't imagine not having that. Because they are such big players in my life. I can't imagine my dad not going on his, you know, brother golf outing every year. It's part of routine now. It's just annual routine. And I just can't imagine not having him. All of those moments would have been missed without him. you know, not that we would have lost a relationship with my cousins or his wife, but I mean, she would have naturally gravitated towards her family for that support. You know, you go to your own blood, and it would have just been a little harder. I'm not saying, again, that we wouldn't have seen him. It would have just been different. And those family moments would have been different. And I wouldn't be able to say that, yeah, suicide is, you can recover from those feelings. You know, knowing that he survived has changed my thought process on it. And I can defend when I hear other people talk differently about their feelings on suicide. I can stand and defend and say, no, like don't talk about it that way. Make yourself approachable to someone else. You know, I can't relate to someone that feels like suicide's their only option, but I can relate to someone that wants to support someone that may feel that way. I can say, I don't know why you're feeling that way, but I know that you can recover from it. I know from my experience of what it takes to support someone and not judge. You know, and that's the beauty that came from a very dark situation. And I don't wish that experience on anyone. But if you are going to experience it, walk away with a better understanding of how to help.
What would you say to someone who is considering suicide?
You know, if you feel like suicide is your only option, I would say look at other times where you have been down. Think of that first heartbreak or that time you were broke in college, and think of where you are now. Think of other journeys you've gone on, whether it's a fitness journey or something. See where you started low and you ended high. Time is going to go on, whether we want it to or not. We can't stop it. And you can only get so low before you have to start going up. And just because you don't think that it's going to go up doesn't mean it's not. You can recover, but you can't recover if you take your life. You close that door. Work towards opening as many doors as possible. Open a door for recovery by putting down the alcohol or whatever substance of choice. Open that door to recovery by reaching out to someone, a chaplain. Walk into whatever church you see on the corner and ask for the pastor, and someone will help you. Walk down the halls here in our wing and go see mental health. Open that door for recovery by telling your wingman you are not okay. You are not weak if you're thinking of suicide. You're not weak. You're just in a tough spot. And the strongest thing you can do is to say, I'm not okay. And to ask for help. And, you know, your wingman next to you may not know what to do. They may not be qualified to sit there and be your personal counselor. And that's okay. But we all know how to put you in touch with the right people that can. Open that door to recovery by just saying something to someone. someone that you trust. Even if it's someone you don't know, have that moment of trust and just speak up. Open that door by being strong and just say, I'm not okay. That takes strength. And you can recover. Every day that you continue is another day that you are allowing the opportunity to happen, that someone can help you. Don't close that door to recovery by ending your life. You can't recover if you're not here. And we'll help you if we know. And we want to help.
What would you say to anyone who knows somebody who is considering suicide right now?
If you know someone that is contemplating suicide, don't let them down. It's not, I think. Okay, as airmen, just generalizing for the military, as airmen, we take on a lot. We have the pressure, literally, of the world to take care of everyone on our shoulders. And if we take care of each other first, then we can go do our job. And if we know someone that's suffering, whether inside the unit or not, we need to say something to someone. You know, point them in the direction of a chaplain. If you know someone that's contemplating suicide, don't judge. Remember, how you feel doesn't matter. It matters how that person feels. If you can't comprehend a situation that you think it's appropriate to take your life, then don't judge someone who is in that situation. Make yourself someone that someone can go to and not feel judged and not feel like you're going to shame them out of feeling the way that they are. Direct them to the right place. You may feel like, hey, this is selfish. Okay, but don't say that. Don't say that to someone. Hey, you're selfish. That's not giving them a sense of, you know, self-worth or importance. If you're not the right person for them, take them to someone that is. Check in on them. Do what you can to make them feel like they belong and that they have a purpose, no matter what that purpose is, you know, where they're at in the community, whatever role or contribution they make, let them know that that's important. If you know someone that is contemplating suicide, you know, you may not be able to fix whatever it is in their life that's going wrong, that's causing them to feel that way, but you can contribute to everything else in their life. So they know that, hey, if this one piece isn't worth living for, I've got all these other things that are. And that's important to hold on to. If someone's job or, you know, my experience, finances is what's dragging someone down, make sure that they know that their role in your family is so important and that is worth living for. Give them purpose. And if you're not sure how to do that, find someone else that can. Keep that door open for them. Recovery.
All right, I think that covers it. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much to everyone listening to this episode of Beyond the Horizon. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave us a rating and review. That helps us rise in the podcast rankings and helps other people find our show. If you're looking for more ways to connect with the 178th Wing, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also reach us at beyondthehorizonpodcast@gmail.com with any questions you have for us.